Hello, stranger. How are you?
Hello. Yeah, good, thank you. How are you, Philip?
I'm all right, thanks. Welcome back to our listeners. We were recording episodes, but we had a break. Not saying it's been a really, really long break, but in that time, Rachel, you're now a grandmother.
I am. Human life
Muzzle.
has been created in that interval. I mean, I imagine a lot of human life has been created in that interval, but not as important as this one.
Well, congratulations to you, and I bet you are the doting grandmother.
Well, it's interesting because listening back to this recording, which is now older than my grandchild, we talk about the idea of him being born and what I'm going to be called and whatever, and go through various options. And maybe I'll surprise everyone at the end of the show with the final decision.
Yes, let's leave it as a teaser. So listen at the end of the episode and Rachel will reveal what she's called. This episode that we're about to have, just to give you the exact context of when it was recorded, it was whilst the Queen was lying in state. So that's how long ago it was. But we've been recording a while, then we just life took over and we had to have a bit of a pause to regroup and kind of gather our thoughts. So obviously we're sorry for those of you that have missed us and hope that we can make up with these next batch of episodes that will be coming out over the next few weeks. But that's how long ago this was recorded.
It's very surreal listening back because it feels a bit like when you open a time capsule,
Yes.
because it was the day of the National Minute Silence.
So yeah, and we did debate quite hotly what we do about the minute silence, because we can't just have a minute of, I mean, pardon the expression, dead air on a podcast. So we did debate what to do with it. And I think we've respectfully honored the moment. And as you said, like a time capsule, it was a moment in history, which is, I think, why we thought it was important to keep it in and keep the reference to it.
It was also the London Podcast Festival when we were recording this, which was booked months in advance, and we were so excited to do it. But of course, on the day, we had a huge number of people who didn't show up because they were either watching the TV at home to see like the process. There was, if you, I don't know how many people are listening to this from abroad, but I'm sure even you heard about the queue of people who are waiting to visit Her Majesty lying in state that became kind of its own entity. And it was like a really big deal, that queue. So lots of people were either in the queue or watching the queue online or experiencing the sadness of the nation in some other way. So whereas we've been expecting quite a big crowd, we end up with a huge room with a very boutique crowd who
Yeah.
sat very far back in the room for unfathomable reasons. So you'll hear them when they clap. You can't really hear them laugh because the microphones are facing us. So you're just going to have to take our words for it that there were some human beings there. They did find it funny.
And they weren't all related to us. That's important
Not
to
all.
remember. Anyway, we're excited to be back. We've got some lovely episodes coming up over the next few weeks. I think we're just going to put them out sort of periodically as we've got them and edited them. So we'll keep you posted on social media at Jew Talkin without the G. So keep following us for that. Who are we talking to this week?
Today, you're going to hear our chat with the phenomenal Helen Zaltzman, who is podcast royalty. Give her a Google. Well, we'll tell you all about her in a moment, but it was a really lovely chat and really interesting to hear about her Jewish background, which includes an awful lot of dark comedy. So very suitable for a day we were thinking about a dead monarch. So I hope you enjoy it and listen out for the big reveal at the end.
Hello, I'm Philip Simon.
And I'm Rachel Krieger. We are two Jewish comedians. I'm Orthodox, so I told Philip there'd probably be a Kaddish on behalf of the royal family.
And I'm Reform, so I thought she said Kiddish and got excited there'd be fish balls.
This show is the audio equivalent of The Queue. It's created friends for life, people around the world are fascinated by it, and we all really want to know what everybody's eating.
In each episode, we chat to our favourite Jews about their lives and experiences growing up and how much Jewishness plays a part. Are they Balmoral or Baal Teshuvah?
Are they royalty or lemon tea?
Are they Western Wall or Westminster Hall?
Welcome to Jew Talking to Me, live from the London Podcast Festival here at King's Place. Let's introduce our guest. She's a broadcaster, writer, and multi-award-winning podcaster, best known for The Allusionist and Answer Me This. It's Helen Zaltzman.
Hello.
Welcome. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Helen, regular listeners to the podcast will know that we always like to find out how our guests describe their Jewish background. So you know that I'm Reform and Rachel is Orthodox, but what kind of Jew are you?
I am second generation lapsed.
that's really lapsed.
Oh yeah, it was a very deliberate lapse on the part of my father who grew up, who was the only son of two, I think, Orthodox Jews, but the Orthodox Judaism they subscribed to looked a bit different to what I'd associate it with today. And I think they expected him to become a rabbi, and so his teenage rebellion was to extremely not do that. And then he left South Africa and came here and married a goy. And my grandparents threatened to throw themselves out of their hotel window to their deaths.
Wow.
Yes. So my mother, who's a very conciliatory and saintly person, she had, and she's atheist, she had a conversion in Israel, which apparently was more like a kind of financial dealing. There wasn't scholarship involved or anything, and
oh, really?
And they had a civil wedding here, a second wedding in Israel, and then she had two boys, and so my grandparents were like, okay, now that she's had the boy children, she passes, it's fine. But I wasn't part of this deal where the conciliation plan with the grandparents, because I was a mistake baby several years later. Aww. So my brothers had to have bar mitzvahs, and I didn't have to do anything.
Wow.
Yeah, they also didn't think bat mitzvahs were a thing. They thought that was just newfangled and unnecessary.
That's the best thing about them.
Being newfangled and unnecessary?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Is it too late for me to have one in 42? It's kind of too late, isn't it?
Do you know what? I would throw you a bat mitzvah tomorrow if you wanted.
You didn't know that's why you're here tonight. We've got a whole setup.
A Torah scroll is arriving.
Oh my God, I haven't been studying, haven't practiced the songs. I don't know what happens at them. I've never been to a bat mitzvah either.
Oh, then you'll fit right in.
Great.
It's fine. You're absolutely perfect.
Okay, cool. But it felt like the Judaism of my childhood was firstly, discharge the obligations to my grandparents, which was for my brothers to have Hebrew lessons twice a week until they were bar mitzvahed. And we did like Friday nights and stuff and Passover and Hanukkah a little bit. And that was about it. But then after they were bar mitzvahed, when I was seven, it was like we only did Judaism when my grandmother was visiting from South Africa for 3 weeks every summer. And sometimes my dad would deliberately annoy her by like eating ham in front of her or coming in wearing a knotted handkerchief instead of a kippah.
Yeah. Wow.
So is that like when someone's giving you an awful wedding present and you have to get it out when they come and visit?
Oh,
did you have to get mezuzahs on the door? And
she would bring over terrible presents like fluffy toilet seat covers. And
that's not a Jewish thing, Helen. Like, no, I don't know how much you know, but that's not...
Well, she would live up to stereotype by bringing presents she'd been given. Like, she would bring boxes of chocolates that were years out of date or like packets of tights with one pair taken out. And
I do need to know how many years out of date, simply because my mother is in the audience and there are certain things that were in our cupboards growing up and beyond growing up.
Oh, well, they never go out of date. They're eternal.
Okay.
Yep.
Eternal tights.
And she also used to bring Cadbury's, even though that was a British company and the South African Cadbury's was where. It was a befuddling thing. But my dad never stopped trying to piss her off.
Right.
He once interrupted the Friday night proceedings to take a phone call from God.
Really?
And then he was like, oh, no, sorry, no, number unobtainable. This went on until his 70s, because she lived till 99. That was the only point at which he stopped trying to annoy his mother.
I mean, that does sound quite Jewish.
Yeah, it's a commitment to the bit, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
To annoying your parents. My mum always says, one day you'll be blessed with a child who's exactly like you. Oh. Like, that's the biggest punishment you can have. And it's happened, everybody. So lucky me. Lucky me, both of them. I think taking a phone call from God at Friday night dinner is outstanding rebellious behaviour.
Yeah, he also used to read the prayers incredibly fast, which was just so funny. Mm. It was just very, very disruptive.
I like a disruptive person.
Well, we used to have that in the youth groups that I went to. You'd have to do grace after meals after each meal. And there was one guy, he would rattle through the entire grace after meals as quickly as he could to see how many times he could get from start to finish by the time we got from start to finish. I think his record was 18.
What?
Just to be awkward.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Challenging himself.
I think challenging the leaders.
Challenging the leaders.
Really.
But did they care?
They were quite angry about it, yeah.
Why didn't they just speed up?
Yeah.
Do you know what? They never thought about that.
This is the sort of thing I'm going to obsess about for ages, about their reaction to it and why
why didn't they speed up? Why didn't they give him a prize? Like, it's an impressive thing.
I don't think they were impressed.
Guinness record.
Yeah. I'll ask him for more information. We'll update, and another episode of the podcast will update. Maybe we'll get him on the show.
Because I also think prayers, it is quantity, isn't it, rather than quality, since you have to repeat them so much.
Well, that's an interesting question. Is it quantity over quality? I mean, I don't know. I mean, out of the three of us, I'm trying to work out who prays the most.
It's
heavily weighted to this end of the table.
I think so.
And even that is not as much as some people might like. And I definitely go for quality over quantity. I'd rather do something heartfelt and minimal than...
But you do it every week, so yours must be quantity. Mine... would be quality, because I wait until it's really necessary.
Yeah. And then let me find a parking place. Oh, sorry. Yeah. That sort of thing.
That's what I think.
Thanks for what you think. Very helpful. I'm team your dad now, I think. Isn't that terrible?
I'm sorry.
No, I just was thinking that I am to become a grandmother shortly. Thank you very much. And one of the things I keep thinking is, what name can I give myself as a grandmother that will annoy my mum the most? Because... I just think it will be really funny to see her face if I say, "Yeah, I'm gonna be Nana." She won't like that. She's very proper. So I've thought Nana. I've also thought about saying, "I think we're gonna be formal," and she'll be like, "What, grandmother?" And I'll be like, "No, Mrs. Krieger." That's what I want my grandchild to call me, Mrs. Krieger. Let's not get too familiar at this stage.
What does she want you to be called?
I mean, probably Granny, because she's Granny, but she also wants to stay Granny and not be great Granny, so I don't know how that's going to work. Or something like Bubba or Suvta, like something super Jewy. Do you know what? I think I'm going to let the child decide for themselves when they're old enough.
You should. Well, they'll come up with a nickname for you anyway before they're even really conscious of being verbal.
The embarrassing one is what they'll...
Yes, I'm sorry.
Hopefully.
When I was five, and we had these little books at school, so if you didn't know how to spell a word, you would go up to the teacher and they would teach you how to spell it. And I didn't know how to spell Bubba. And nor did the teacher, because we were basically the only Jews in town and the teacher wasn't one. And so she wrote Booba, right, as in one who boobs.
Right.
Which...
I mean, that could be a fair answer.
I mean, it wasn't really tonally
one
my
who boobs
vibe.
Suggests that there's a teacher conjugating that verb as well.
To boob, yeah.
I boob, you boob, he...
Actually...
She boobs, we boobs.
I can see the utility of that, yeah.
Well, I mean, we had a great-grandmother growing up. I mean, she was related to us. We managed to find her. And she was known as Putsy in our family because I was the oldest grandchild, and she used to say Putsy to me all the time, and she was German, and it means, I think, little cat or kitten. I'm looking into the audience in case anyone here can help me. I've no idea. But she's called me Putsy or Putzela, little kitten or little cat, which is cute. But because she always, every time she saw me, she said Putsy, I thought that's her name. I genuinely thought that's what she was called. And from then on, everybody had to call her that. So,
well, just to keep up the pretense for you.
Yeah.
Like a sort of Truman Show thing.
Yeah, I thought that meant, like, if anything, German great-grandmother.
My grandma used to call me Putz. Is that the same thing?
No. I mean, no, but accurate.
Okay.
Did you think that people generally come into rooms saying their own names?
I was only a baby. What did I know? Yeah. It's like object permanence. Every time that object appeared, it said a sound. I thought that was what we reply back to.
That's how formal it is in the household. They get announced every time they walk in the room. Mrs. Krieger.
Every night at her ball.
Yeah.
Is there, what is the grandbubba? Do people say grandbubba? I didn't have one, so I don't know.
I imagine it's something like gross bubba.
Gross bubba. Wow.
I think
super bubba.
Super bubba. I could go for,
because your mum could get upgraded to super bubba in your family when your grandchild's out.
She could do. Well, this is going to be interesting. I'd phone her now, but I don't think it would be appropriate.
She might not take the call.
No. I'll tell her it's God.
I'll phone her. She'll take the call.
Philip phones. She prefers Philip. But let's not dwell on that now, because this, even though it feels like it, isn't my therapy. We always like to find out what's the most Jewish thing that's happened to us recently. So, Philip, you mentioned something earlier. What's the most Jewish thing that's happened to you?
You told me about your arrival here.
Oh, no, I did.
You parted a sea.
I did.
parted a sea.
It was the only way to get over the Grand Union Canal. No, it was the lovely lady at the front desk. I was trying to find out how we were doing on ticket sales. I said to her, "Do you talking to me?" And I think she got quite affronted that's how I was talking to her. And then I explained that was the name of the show. So for me, the most Jewish thing is kind of walking into a venue that's hosting your event and still having to... The imposter syndrome, I guess, of having to say, hi, I'm here to do a show. So that was for me. What's the most serious thing that's happened to you?
Just the fact that when I got here, I realised that I hadn't given my child lunch and he's probably still sitting at home hungry. And I think that's kind of unforgivable. Yeah. Somebody's laughing really in a way that's making me cry. Have you also forgotten to give your child lunch before? And you're feeling, oh, that's right, she's nodding. So it's a laugh of recognition and not of, ah, 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 you're a terrible Jewish mother. In a way, we all are. So, yeah, that's my most Jewish thing, really, of the day.
How old is he?
He's, I mean, in fairness, 17, and will definitely go out, buy himself a bag of pasta and eat it all before we get back.
Before cooking it as well. These crisps are very nice.
Yeah, he is quite self-sufficient, but also I'm really conscious of the fact that at the end of this academic year, he moves on to other things and will be empty nesters. So I do still like feeding him.
Aww.
It's not on weekends.
Not on weekends. It's like,
no. You're training him up for next year. You can see it that way.
I'm empowering him. Right. Actually, I'm an excellent Jewish mother. If anything, I'm the best.
Congrats.
Thanks.
It's a good achievement.
What about you, Helen? What's the most Jewish thing that's happened to you recently?
Well, I just went and down to stay with my mother for a couple of days. Got back yesterday. And we recently put my father into a care home because he has advanced Parkinson's and dementia. And we were talking about what happens if he dies, which probably isn't that imminent, even though his life seems to be difficult. However, my mum was saying, I don't know what I'll do if he wants a Jewish funeral, because I don't know what is involved, because as good as she was at being the best Jew in our household, despite being the convert one, we were Jews in isolation. And she didn't have that much contact with my dad's family because they're all in South Africa and the whole funeral culture. So you, right. None of us know what is needed. Although she did say that when my dad had to attend his mother's funeral, she unfortunately gave him his best shirt to wear and then he had to rend it. Right. She's like, never been able to get it back to what it was. Never been able to darn it back. So, we had a sort of morbid conversation about what if my dad wants a Jewish funeral, which we don't know because we can't ask him what he wants his death rites to be.
I mean, if we were a different kind of podcast, we'd probably throw that one out to the audience.
I would appreciate
it. We put it on our social media. What would you hashtag that?
I don't know, but I feel right now any hashtag to do with funerals is going to get lost in the noise. So it's probably a lot of other stuff going on. Take some notes from what the rules are.
Well, that's not a Jewish funeral, is it?
No, but they've got...
She's still out the ground for a start. It's been like 10 days.
That's also true.
Sorry, I don't know when this episode's getting released.
It would probably be quite a few weeks, but they'll still be queuing. There's a lot going on at the moment in the news and in our lives. This is tough times we're living in, so we do like to check in with our guests and make sure that everything's okay by asking, what's the matter, Bubbler? So what's going on with you? What's happening? It could be absolutely anything.
I feel bad to complain. I have a nice life. I'm very lucky. I mean, I don't love my dad having advanced Parkinson's and dementia. That's pretty sad. But so I have a question inspired by current events, which, you know, I find it a difficult situation where if you want to question anything about the current events, people are like, no, how dare you? But maybe this is the room for this particular question.
Okay.
If the Queen was elected by God to be our monarch, is that just the Christian God, or even just specifically the Anglican God, or is that like a representative from all religions' gods that has chosen her? Or is like the Jewish God, like, that's not the family I chose.
I like that you pointed at me when you said Jewish God.
In theory, it's all the same God, but worshipped in different ways and from different perspectives. And if we've discussed before on our show that the kind of multiverse theory of Judaism, there is one.
I'm into it.
And so maybe this is the multiverse where we have that queen who's part of a chain that believes that God put them in that place, much in the same way that we all believe we're meant to be. That was a really hard sentence to say. And maybe there's another multiverse or many multiverses where things are different.
Well, there's the whole multiverse where it's like the different family lineage that is the one that continues.
I mean, somewhere it could be Philip.
as the king.
Yeah.
I can see that.
That's not too distant dimension, is it?
No. Again, a very different podcast. But welcome to King's Place.
I don't know the answer, because I think that religion is such a fundamentally personal thing, and people who believe in something really believe in it, and people who don't really don't. And so if you're brought up thinking that's your inheritance, I think it's probably quite hard to be the person who says, actually, I'm going to be an atheist, so I'm going to leave the line here. Because then what would happen? Would it just pass down to whoever's next in line for the throne? Or would it mean that a whole new king or queen has to be chosen by God again?
Do you think that they're in a particularly theologically motivated situation, given how the Church of England began as a more logistical entity?
I don't think I'm qualified to answer that. That someone gave like a sigh of relief. I don't think I'm qualified to answer that. But I do think that if they had to pick a new one, because of the way that we live now, I reckon it would be some kind of reality TV challenge.
I really think that wouldn't be so bad. You know, you choose people for like 3 years to have the fancy castles and to do various challenges. Maybe
one fancy castle.
Horse show jumping.
Show jumping.
Yeah.
Could work.
It's basically the same, isn't it? It's just being a bit more honest about it.
I think that we could pitch that to someone. There's probably someone here who could pitch that
we'll
to.
We'll pitch it to the Lord. Pick people that way.
If it's what God wants, it will happen. I'll pray for it.
But it's a good question.
Thank you.
When we put the episode out, we'll put some kind of a Twitter question out as well to listeners to see what they think. So I think this is a conversation that will continue, not just about the God element, but I think the monarchy in general. There's conversations happening everywhere.
Mm. I saw people being angry at the prospect of Charles being head of the Anglican Church because he's divorced. Mm. And I thought the cognitive dissonance there being quite intense given how that church began.
Yeah, it's interesting. My teenage son at home starving and probably crying now, he's very into history. And he told us at the weekend that he learned that you can only be an Anglican if you're in the line to the throne type bit of the monarchy. So everybody who's married in has had to convert in some way. And I don't want to cast aspersions on people's conversions and how much they're just getting out the crosses and whatever.
Yeah, my mother paid good money for that certificate.
Quite right. Yeah, and I imagine certain other members of the royal family might have done the same. I don't know, but I never knew that. I never knew that you had to be, if you were going to marry in, that you had to do some kind of a conversion.
I mean, you can get ordained on the internet now, so probably you can convert as well.
If you're marrying your cousin, are they not in it already? Or
are you thinking of someone in particular?
I know,
I didn't know you knew my cousin.
If theoretically a royal was marrying their cousin,
yeah,
would the cousin already be in the life?
Yeah. You'd hope so. This has got very complicated.
Sorry.
And I'm genuinely talking about stuff I have absolutely no idea about and I'm starting to get quite nervous.
It's also the first time an episode of You Talking to Me has been stumped by the Anglican Church. It rarely comes up.
It's what happens when you get the second generation lapsed ones
in. Right. This is
actually
chaos.
It's the second time. I'll tell you why, because during Edinburgh we were supposed to record a podcast with them and then they got too busy and they couldn't do it. And it was genuinely the church podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's true,
second time. Who'd have thunk it? Second time that the Anglicans have got to us today, or in history.
Boo.
So, Helen, I have mentioned the tragic tale of my starving child. Now, you're picturing him like...
Do you want us to call him? We could call him now, check if he's all right.
He wouldn't be able to pick up the phone with his weakened immune system.
I feel like everyone
now
is...
Just hear the crunching of raw pasta.
Everyone else picturing him like Cosette in Les Miserables, like sweeping a floor and singing Castle on a Cloud. There is food in my house, obviously. There's enough for about 40 people. So we like to ask about your connection to either Jewish food or a meal with Jews, like you've mentioned Seder night and things like that. But what's your favourite Jewish food memory?
Well, my mother, as aforementioned, was the best Jew in the household, despite being the convert one. And when my grandmother used to visit, my mother would go and try and find kosher meat for her, which in Tunbridge Wells was not easy. So she would drive nearly an hour to Brighton to buy kosher meat.
Wow.
And then I remember my grandmother wouldn't eat it because she didn't believe it wasn't pork, even though it was a chicken leg. And I don't know why she thought my mum would sabotage her by feeding her pork, because my mum would never have done something like that. Like, she drove for nearly 2 hours to get this woman a kosher chicken leg. Why would she then be like, I'm going to feed her pork for a gag?
That's, first of all, good on your mum for doing that.
She's a wonderful woman.
That really is wonderful, going out 2 hours to get chicken.
You've got to remember, back then, petrol was affordable.
Yeah, true.
So you wouldn't do it now.
Would it now? It'd be like...
But also, a chicken leg is quite...
It's quite different to it. But I suppose my grandmother wouldn't necessarily have known what a pig could look like.
All right. I mean, it's unlikely to look like a pulka, a chicken leg.
Right, yeah.
But pulka does sound like porker. I'm just saying, it could be a thing.
All right. Which also, like, boober. I mean, there's so many words.
So many words. Was it just the chicken leg that she brought back?
Was she?
I think she would.
I think she, because my grandmother had a bird-like appetite, my mum would buy four chicken legs for, like, four different dinners, but my grandmother was so suspicious.
That she thought it was pork.
Yeah. Wow. Isn't that sad?
I mean, it's sad, but also a bit funny.
Yeah, well, yeah. I wouldn't have told you if it was just, you know, and then she cried herself to death.
Wow. One of my best friends is, she's Greek Orthodox, not Jewish, but it's the same. And her grandma doesn't believe in vegetarians because she thinks...
She's never met one.
Well...
Don't exist.
She just thinks that you should have meat. It's a very important part of your diet. That's her yaya. Very strong belief in the eating of meat. And if people say they're vegetarian, she tells them that she's provided them vegetarian food, and it's virtually always got meat in it.
Oh, that's awful.
That's her thing. But she feels like she's doing something good for them.
That's kind of abusive behaviour.
But she's very old, so we have to go, oh. But yeah, it is.
What's the cutoff age where you go, ah, about someone poisoning you?
I don't know. It's a real thing. And... I know that a friend of ours who's vegetarian went around there. Like, the good thing about being properly kosher is you don't run into these issues, because if you're going somewhere there's not kosher food, you bring your own. Mm-hmm. A friend of ours who's vegetarian went around there once, and my friend Yaya said, I've got some soup. And she said, you know, I'm vegetarian. She goes, yeah, it's vegetable soup. And eventually she got into the soup and she found what appeared to be a bit of some animal, and she said, what's that? And she said, oh, it's a special vegetable. There's horror in the room. It's a special vegetable. Well, you know, like, we all taste like chicken and all that, I think. I don't know. I don't think it was a person. I think I've gone into a dark territory there. But yeah.
Special vegetable.
Special vegetable called meat.
That's impressive.
Yeah. That's like what we tell children, though, isn't it? Like, you tell your children... What do you call your...
Oh, because my son likes meatballs, but doesn't like casserole, so I just call it meat squares.
Oh.
And he loves it.
Meat squares.
Meat squares.
He won't have the bits with it, you know, the veg in it, but he'll have the meat, and that's what matters, because you've got to have meat.
So I do think, like, maybe the whole it's special vegetables probably started off as a thing for kids, but it's stuck now. I don't know. But it's a shame. Did your grandma have reason not to believe your mum about things? Because your mum sounds like she's a decent sort.
She's a very decent sort, and she tried really hard to do everything right by my grandmother. And also, what was weird is my grandmother didn't really insist on kosher meat.
Oh, wow.
So my mum sort of made this effort because she thought it would be, you know, a courtesy, and sort of really making sure that it was meat that my grandmother would be definitely happy with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Your grandma sounds tough.
She was...
What did you call her?
Bubba.
Bubba.
She was a real... You know how everyone has recipes where they're like, my grandmother's version is the best? I don't have that from either grandmother.
Really?
No. What am I missing? What were the good things your grandmother's made?
What did grandma cook? She fried fish once a year. That was a
fish day
thing. A Passover fish day. Fish day, yeah. Actually, she went vegetarian in later life.
Right.
But I used to cook her salmon, and she'd eat it.
Did you have to call it a special vegetable?
No, she said, I'm vegetarian, except for Philip's salmon.
That's
the only thing. She would completely put her feelings aside just for me.
Oh, that is sweet.
That is very sweet.
Yeah. Oh, I just remembered a special thing that Bubba did cook. Okay. She put my mother's handbag on a hot ring on the stove and burnt through it.
I mean, that's not traditional Jewish food, if I'm honest. There's not a Yiddish word for it or anything.
She didn't leave me the recipe either.
Both my grandmothers were big cooks, but they cooked very differently. So I had my German grandma who made very sort of super traditional food, and then my Polish grandma, but she came here very young. And so half her food was kind of traditional and half it was very, very British. Like, that was the deal. So it would be, you'd either be having some kind of traditional, like, potato kugel or chicken soup or whatever it is, or, like, full roast Sunday dinner. Or I'm trying to think, she used to do this amazing thing. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, which usually means I've mentioned it about 400 times. She'd invite us over for egg and chips. And she'd cook it in this massive pot, a schissel, big old pot in Yiddish. And she actually, long before there was Heston Blumenthal, she would triple fry her chips. Ooh. Which is quite impressive. But so she'd make all these chips, she'd sort of do the second fry of the chips, put them to one side, and then she would drop in an egg into that oil in that massive thing. And it kind of explodes into this giant egg. I can't explain
to you. Well, like a deep-fried cloud.
Yes, a deep-fried cloud. That's beautiful, with crispy edges and still runny in the middle. I literally I hope my son doesn't listen to this. He'll be so hungry.
This will not go out for a few weeks. If you've not fed him by then, there's a real problem.
I probably will have fed him. Anyway, and then she'd take them out, put them onto greaseproof paper, and then do the third fry. And then you'd get like a nest of chips. Are you all starving now? A nest of chips with this massive egg in the middle. Yeah,
wow.
Egg clouds. And then you'd be like eating to get to the dippy yolk.
Did she fry the egg thrice as well?
No, that would
for
be
the best.
Grim.
Be a yeah. little much.
But it's just like, it was just that kind of split between the desire to be very English and, you know, my grandparents were very into their gratitude to the UK for, you know, saving our lives and stuff. And then the desire to pass on the family recipes. So that was the split. But as far as I know, no one ever cooked a hamburg.
As far as you know. Maybe she made it just taste so good you didn't realise it was a bag.
That would have been the other grandma. Mm.
It's the kind of thing a vegetarian would do if it was a leather handbag, to kind of protest.
Hurt it further?
Well, you know, when people throw paint on fur coats and things like that, it's to protest that animals have been used in the production of anything.
What happened to the contents of the hamburg?
Well, I think they were lightly scorched.
Okay.
Just gasoline.
One of those burners that's like a spiral, so there's a beautiful spiral shape imprinted forever. She would also stand right behind you whenever you're doing anything in the kitchen. So if you're trying to cut bread, you'd just be elbowing her in the stomach repeatedly. Just don't know what went on with her mind.
So mine used to phone me if I was making family recipe food. She used to phone me like pretty much every 10 minutes to find out what stage of the cooking I was at to check she approved. And one year for Passover, I was making... we used to call it a sour stew. It's kind of sour meatballs, really delicious. It's like meatballs in a kind of egg and lemon sauce. Delish. Anyway, and she was phoning me like literally every 10 minutes, what are you doing now? What are you doing now? What have you done now? And I was following her recipe exactly and doing everything exactly how she told me. And then she said, actually, do you know what? Maybe don't tell everyone it's a family thing just in case it's not 100% right. Just tell them, just tell them it's something you've come up with. And I thought, wow, that's confidence.
Nice to be trusted, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's that level of self-esteem that's brought me to where I am today.
And that leads very nicely into the idea of Bruegus and arguments and family feuds, so we can move on very seamlessly. Because we all know that Jews love a Bruegus. The pettier the feud, the better. It could be absolutely anything. You might not even remember where it started, why it exploded into what it was. The obvious one we always talk about is whether we say bagel or beigel. I say bagel, Rachel is wrong.
Correctly says beigel.
Do we, in the audience, do we have people who have a consent, like, is their opinion bagel or beigel?
Bagel.
Give me a cheer for beigel, my husband. And that is why I married him. Mark, I'm going to throw you a Team Beigel badge.
So we have some Team Bagel or Team Beigel badges. So at some point, I won't throw badges out necessarily, but if you want to, after the show, grab a Team Bagel badge, or Team Bible, then please do feel free.
I mean, one of our longest debates, and I'm saying debate, heated debate, was about how many of each we should order. I said we had to do 50-50, and so far, because I think we haven't quite had the Essex representation I might have hoped for. We've got quite a lot of Bibles left.
You're my first Bible that I've ever encountered, yeah.
Really?
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm authentic, that's all I can tell you.
Well, Okay. Anyway, before this really does kick off...
The etymology of bagel is biagle, so like, what does that lend itself better to? It means ring.
Biagle. Yeah. Oh, now we'd have to get badge printed. Team Biagle.
Well, we've moved beyond biagle, because that was, I can't remember, at least 1,000 years ago.
Right.
But...
Judaism is always modernising. That's what I find.
Yeah, it's like change.
There are feuds galore, so that's our pettier one. Do you have any that you want to share with us? Any family feuds, friends, anything you know about?
Well, I mean, I'm in a feud with my only aunt. I don't know if she knows about the feud.
Those are the best ones.
But I've been in it with her since 2006 when she buried my other grandmother without telling anyone.
I mean, like in the middle of the night.
Well, I don't know when she did it, but she and my mother were planning that grandmother's funeral, and then she was like, well, there won't be an interment because I've already done it.
Okay. I feel like there were a lot of questions.
So, I have questions, but I'm also not talking to her, so I don't have answers.
So, a few questions. She was definitely dead.
She was definitely dead.
And it had been announced.
That's one thing.
It had been announced, so they were planning the funeral.
They were planning the funeral,
right.
And then my aunt was like, I'm going to have my own little funeral before the funeral.
Do you know where?
We do know where, because that was a whole thing as well.
But I love the whole thing.
It's gonna get Anglican again. The feuds, you have to go 4 years further back than that, 2002, when my grandfather died, and his wish was not to be buried in a churchyard and not to have any grave marker. And my grandmother was like, okay, I won't give him a grave marker. He didn't have a funeral. He didn't want that either. But she wanted to be buried in the churchyard, and so she buried him there so that she could be buried with him later. And... my uncle, my mother's brother, was very angry at her disobeying my grandfather's wishes and said, when she dies, I'm going to put her on the dust cart, just as hyperbole. And my aunt decided to take that literally. And she said to my mother, well, I thought if I left her ashes in the crematorium, he would come and take them and put them on the dust cart. And I thought if I told you, then... you would tell him and he'd go to the churchyard and see the freshly turned piece of turf and he'd dig her up and put her on the dust cart.
That's the most unbelievable story.
I know.
That's incredible.
It is a bit.
I was just thinking about, you know, when you see the dust cart and it's got like the teddy strapped to it and everything. Just a little urn with your grandma in.
Right. Could be. Maybe she wasn't dead at all. Maybe that's my aunt's big cover story.
Yeah.
Maybe she's living it up somewhere. She said, I didn't want to be a bother. So I thought I'd just faint my own death and then you don't have to worry about me.
Maybe that's why Jews bury the dead so quickly.
Right, just to make sure
just
it's
to make
done.
Sure no one else tries to kind of gazump them.
Yeah, no aunts snaking the ashes away.
Yeah. How long has this been going on?
That happened in 2006. So I'm still not talking to my aunt due to... still not able to square that circle.
Do you know what her wishes are when she dies?
Nope. That's her problem.
How does she feel about dust carts?
Don't know, don't care. I know, she probably fears dust carts more than anything, evidently.
Well.
Fate worse than the death that had already happened.
So so they didn't want to do a thing where they dug up your grandfather and put them together. They didn't think that would be a thing.
There's a little section of that churchyard where where you can be buried without a marker if you've been cremated, so they were going to...
Oh, okay.
That's where I assume they both are.
Right.
And my uncle was like, of course I wasn't going to put her on the dust cart.
It was all a joke.
Well, it was just stuff you say when you're frustrated with your relatives doing some nonsense.
Yeah. Goodness.
So presumably this must come back to haunt you guys every bin day.
Granny haunts us.
Like, every other Monday you guys...
Well, actually, maybe my aunt averted the haunting that could have happened. Maybe I should end the feud and be grateful to her. No. It's something...
Why would you give up a feud?
I know.
Especially such a good one.
There's something to be relished about it, isn't there? It doesn't hurt me. Other feuds might, but this one doesn't. She doesn't even know about it, as far as I know. Maybe she will if she listened to this, but I don't know if she has the internet.
She doesn't have the internet.
She's not Jewish.
She's burying people.
Left, right and centre.
Left, right and centre. All over the place.
Yeah. Any of you got any recent cremated relatives? Just look away for a second. No, nothing. No, off she goes. Sorts it all out.
Wow.
It's quite a service she offers.
I guess so, actually. Yeah.
It takes a lot of the pressure off the family, I think.
I mean, is she eccentric in other ways, or is it just this particular...
I'm trying to remember, because now I haven't seen her for 16 years due to the feud. I think she...
I mean, that is the feud, with capital letters and the word TM, teeny weeny, next to it. That's a proper feud.
Yeah, my favourite feud. She was somewhat self-centred. I don't know if that counts as eccentric.
She sounds interesting.
She was interesting, but unfortunately...
I think self-centred is what you would have to say until her eulogy, when you would have to change it to eccentric.
Oh, damn.
That's the thing. I think once you say eccentric, that covers loads of possibilities, but you have to say that at the funeral. You can't say self-centred.
Very interesting, isn't it? The posthumous adjective shifts.
Yeah.
The euphemisms and stuff that obituary writers
have. What a character.
What a character.
There's a famous Jewish joke about that an old man dies and the rabbi manages to scramble enough people together to do the service. Old Jewish man dies, and all the guys, there's all these old men sitting in the congregation, like 10 men, and the rabbi says, "Would somebody like to come up and say something about the deceased?" And no one moves. He says, "Like, come on, you know, I didn't know him. You all knew him. Someone should come up and say something about him." And they all just look at each other. He says, "Seriously, somebody must have something that they can come up and say about the gentleman who's passed away." And eventually a guy shuffles to the front and says, "His brother was worse." Your aunt sounds like quite a character. But if you think about the idea of 6 degrees of Carnty Bacon, other than us, who's your most interesting Jewish connection?
My dad's uncle, Nate, was Nelson Mandela's accountant.
That's a cool connection.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela's accountant.
Yes. That's well, great. I think that was a way that they were allowed to associate in apartheid. Mm. Because my uncle was also, his family were very active in the ANC, and I think it was forbidden for there to be transracial friendships, but accountancy, I guess, allowed.
Because it's paying tax. You've got to be allowed to, you know, do your, yeah?
Who knows how things worked back then in those days.
How long was that relationship?
They were in touch until their deaths, but when Nelson Mandela was in prison, my uncle and his family... had to flee the country, and they came to Britain and they ran a sandwich shop and they did ANC stuff. In fact, the ANC offices were not far from where we were recording, and there was a bomb one day as an assassination attempt, I think in the late 80s. But the person planting the bomb didn't realise it was a bank holiday, so I think there was only one person in the office who was only mildly harmed by the bomb, luckily. That was a very different story.
The idea of that friendship is really fascinating and amazing, and also just that he had a Jewish accountant is hilarious.
I like the idea of a freedom fighter having an accountant.
Everyone needs an accountant, Philip.
Absolutely, and there are definitely accountants in the room, for sure. So I know, that's fine.
Some of them related to you.
Absolutely, we all need accountants. Yeah. But
you need to free up the brain space for the freedom fighting and not be bogged down with admin.
So you came over here.
Yeah.
Didn't continue being accountant.
It's all very fuzzy now because I was very young when they were here, and then when apartheid ended, they went back to South Africa, and then I think my uncle, who was pretty old by then, was doing accounts for the ANC. But then left because there was some kind of dodgy financial stuff happening.
A Bruegus.
A Bruegus.
An ANC Bruegus.
A financial ANC Bruegus.
I like the idea that he was still secretly doing Nelson Mandela's accounts from the sandwich shop, like a sort of superhero, like a Clark Kent character.
Well, while Nelson Mandela was in Robben Island.
Yeah, just somehow. I mean, because didn't they, you know, prisoners have to work and stuff, don't they?
I don't think he had to declare his earnings at that point.
I don't know. I like the idea that your uncle was like a superhero accountant.
All accountants are superheroes. Sorry, I'm just playing to the crowd.
it's Philip's dad.
It's fine.
My son's also an accountant, just to be clear.
Not the 17-year-old one.
No.
Yeah, he's the Doogie Howser of accountants, the youngest accountant in North London.
I mean, he could be if he didn't hate maths. But no, it's the impending father. So, yeah, he's an accountant. So I have achieved something. And now my mum can listen to this one because I made it clear that there's an accountant.
Well done.
Are there any other obligations? It's like, this is the full set you have to complete, so there's family bingo.
I know, the only one I really have to say is that my brother is a paediatric cardiologist. So once everyone knows that, then everything else is commentary.
And then the only other obligation is feeding your child. So
he can have all the Team Bigel badges he can eat.
So Helen, one thing we've not really spoken about today is your work very much. It's great going into the talk about your Jewish memories and the food and things like that. I don't know whether your Jewishness has impacted your work at all, but as a second generation lapsed Jewish.
It's really tricky to know the context of how that might have impacted my work because the Judaism has always been so strange, I think, due to lack of community. Occasionally I get a dodgy tweet from someone anti-Semitic.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
The other day I retweeted something and someone replied saying, said by a Jew. And there's someone who just has a troll account saying weird stuff to people. And I thought, that's the best you've got when this is the sole purpose of your account. A Jew retweeted something. Wow.
I've had harder. I've had that similar. And I always think, is that the best thing you can come up with? Because it's just literally a fact.
Yeah.
It's like, once I remember when I was in social work and one of the young people I was working with called me like a string of offensive things. And in fairness, I'd annoyed them quite a lot. So like, you know, I'm not blameless in the scenario. But afterwards, the head of the centre said, do you want to make a complaint? Because he made an anti-Semitic remark. And I said, I was much more upset that he said I was fat and not funny. Although in fairness, like, at least one of them is biologically factually accurate. But I'd like to think the other one isn't.
Very subjective.
It's very subjective.
Funniness.
That's my worst thing. When people, because I find like when I'm on the radio or anything like that, then people often tweet in a lot of horrible things. And it upsets me much more when they say I'm not funny or I'm not interesting than when they say I'm Jewish or, you know, that I feel.
Well, I mean, what are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah, because I am Jewish.
Right,
so
it's not an insult. It's just
fine, pointing
out a fact.
Yeah, it's like saying I'm blonde or whatever.
Was the thing you retweeted anyway connected to being Jewish? Or
no.
Was it just?
No, it was something unrelated.
So you just jumped on that as a...
Yeah, I think it's also because my surname is pretty Jewish looking and therefore people have certain assumptions about me culturally or politically that are not really related to who I am. But
Do you get anything about like Israel-Palestine ever tweeted at you? Because I always think that's interesting when people tweet that at people who, well, I mean, no one on this stage has any control about what happens in the Middle East. Even my brother, who's
a
paediatric cardiologist.
Actually.
Yeah, you know, even he has no control over it. But yeah, I find that a bizarre thing. Do you get any of that?
Not exactly, but I do get people assuming I'm a Zionist, and I'm not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of assumptions going on.
A lot of assumptions going on. And I just didn't have the... I remember there was some boy at school saying, are you Jewish? And I said, yeah. And he was like, oh, I thought you sounded Jewish. And I was like, what is that? That's like an 8-year-old sound. Yeah, what does that mean? And I don't know.
I'd have loved to know his frame of reference.
Well, none, because we were the only Jews in town, as far as I know.
Maybe he'd watch Yentl or something.
Oh, yeah. All the rage amongst
singing.
The young kids of the 80s.
I suppose if we're the only Jews in town, then if he's heard you speak at all, then of course you sound Jewish.
Oh, that's a very good point. How I speak is how a Jew sounds
in a literal
sense. Or a second generation lapsed Jew.
Yeah, that you are just representative of all Jews.
Can't speak for all Jews, just this one.
Yeah, so he's going to go into some other town somewhere here, another Jew talk, and go, that's not how Jews sound.
But this happened to me, though, because I'd only had my family's Judaism until I went to a Seder at a friend's house when I was like 30, and that was the first time that I'd heard other people say it, and I was like, oh my God, they sing this? They're not doing it in a South African accent? What? No one's called God. This is improper. It was very different. The songs, I went to Passover at a friend's in California, and they had plague finger puppets.
We do that sort of thing.
That was fun. It wasn't. Yeah. The Judaism wasn't fun when I was growing up.
No, but I've been in South Africa around Christmas time, Hanukkah, New Year. You do it on the beach. We can't do that.
Well, you could.
Not
it's just
in
you have
Brighton,
to be prepared to be cold.
Right, but you know, barbecues on the beach and things like that for Christmas lunch. Or Hanukkah.
I think my dad did get a Christmas. His parents ran the village shop in this like very remote area, but because it was predominantly a Christian area, they could shut the shop on Christmas Day. Mm. So he quite liked it just because they didn't work, but he was jealous that everyone else got presents and he didn't, because I also think his family didn't do presents at Hanukkah. But his father's birthday was allegedly Christmas Day. Right. But we think that was because when he immigrated to South Africa, that was the date he could say in English.
To be fair, Jesus' birthday is allegedly Christmas Day.
Yeah, more like September, isn't it?
Yeah, so maybe it's because Jesus could only say 25th of December.
Miracle baby, able to say that. But yeah, there were all these words as well that, hardly any. We didn't have that much Jewish vocabulary, but words we had. Does anyone else here say the word kitka?
Kitka.
Kitka, so that's what they call it. I didn't know the word.
That's
like, challah.
A South African word for challah.
I think it's Lithuanian South African.
Yeah,
specifically, but I didn't know that.
I heard a lecture on it. Isn't that weird? Oh. Philip, don't make that face
at me. Did you learn?
I went to something at Cock Foster's and Southgate Synagogue. Mm-hmm. It was a Friday night thing. There was a speaker talking about... Do you remember? Were you there, Mark, with me? So there was a speaker talking about growing up in South Africa, and she talked about making kitka and that only discovering it was called challah when she went to other communities. Yeah. So that was a thing. Does anyone else know that? It's a proper thing.
Got so much to learn.
Well, it's literally the same. I don't know why it's got its own name. And when she started talking about it, I thought she meant kishka, and she was just pronouncing it in some kind of Sephardi way. Kishka, which is like, I can't translate it. Kishkas is like your guts. When you talk about, I can feel it in my kishkas. That's your guts. But also it's like a stuffing. Is it a stuffing? Someone help me. It's like, kishka is a stuffing, but I think it's, you can have kishka and you can have helzel. They're different kinds of stuffings.
Mm. Well, neither of them are kitka. Unless you shove a kitka loaf inside of something to stuff it.
Or you could have a kishka and a kitka.
You could.
That would be a lovely lunch.
A kitchka.
All I can think of is food.
As can your son.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Well, we've reached very nearly the end of our conversation. We're going to open up to the audience. We've got a few minutes before we respectfully honour a minute's silence. So there is a microphone that can be brought to you. If anyone has a question for Helen or for us about anything related to what we've talked about, feel free to ask it.
You should look at your son's situation positively. You're preparing him for Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur. Yes, he's learning how to fast minute by minute as the minutes tick by. Thank you. That's
And you're increasing the things you're going to need to repent for.
Yeah, also true.
So, yes, that's
bonus.
Excellent.
I'll make the day pass faster.
It's not a question, but you may find in your father's will, if he made one, the funeral arrangements he would like.
I should check.
Are you talking to me?
No.
Okay, because that's my father.
I genuinely thought that you were hinting to Philip.
This is a really weird moment where this is how he tells me this is what he's going to want.
I do think it's useful having this stuff in public domain before it's too pressing a concern, because I think my dad wouldn't have thought about it, and then he's had Parkinson's for 20 years, so I think if we'd asked him at any point in the 20 years, even when he was pretty healthy, he would have been like, you think I'm just about to die? So he wouldn't have told us.
Right.
I think he'd probably want a prank funeral, though. I think that's in line with his whole... pranking during Kiddush and all of that.
Someone has to phone God during it, just to check. Is he in?
Yeah. Oh, there's no spaces left. Oh, where do we put it?
Downstairs? Okay, I'll go downstairs.
You say downstairs, but my parents have told us their arrangements, and they've been buried in a kind of stacker, you know, like in a car park when you've got the different levels. So they live in Israel, and because there's, a lack of space, they have stack of cemeteries in the side of mountains.
I don't want to be buried, I want to be cremated. I've made that clear to the people that need to know. But I do want to have a gravestone purely because I want to write on it, this was not his worst death. which I think, as a comedian...
I can even confirm that.
Yeah.
I would like to be strapped to the front of a garbage...
A dust cart.
A dust cart.
See
like
the world.
This, like a teddy. So if you could sort that out. I horrified people at a panel show thing in Edinburgh by saying that I'd arranged with my husband, I don't know that he's agreed to this, that whichever of us goes first, we're going to be buried together, but like then and there.
We have now reached the point in the evening where it is 8 o'clock. So we're going to take a moment to reflect on the life of Her Majesty the Queen. Thank you very much. Well, that's nearly all we've got time for, but how will our audience know what you're up to if you never call, you don't write? Normally we'd allocate 20 seconds to do this, but for you, 30.
Oh, goodness.
So
you don't really have to do it in 30 seconds.
Plenty of time. But
does this part count towards the 30?
Yeah, it's like an exam.
So social media, where can they find you, what are you up to, things like that.
Well, I'm Helen Zaltzman on Twitter and Instagram, and also Allusionist Show on those platforms. The Allusionist is available where podcasts are available. And if you're listening to the show, maybe you'd enjoy the episode called Blood Is Not Water, which is three Yiddish translators talking about the challenges of translating Black Lives Matter into Yiddish. Really interesting.
Well, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, they were delightful. They were very into each other's work, so it was adorable. They were like, oh my God, I love what Anthony did here. It was really sweet.
Well, I've absolutely loved this. And from now on, I'll always think of Helen Zaltzman as the Jew who would never love her handbag cooked for her unless it could be served in a Kit Kat.
That sounds nice. We'd try it.
And as my grandmother used to say when she wanted to end my telephone calls, you must have better things to do than talk to me, and you must have better things to do than talk to us, which is a good thing, as sadly we've come to the end of this week's show. We'd like to thank our wonderful guest, Helen Zaltzman. Follow her on social media.
Follow us on social media at Jew Talking without the G.
Don't forget to subscribe, like and share the podcast with everyone you know.
And join us next time on Jew Talking to Me.
Jew Talking to Me was hosted by me, Philip Simon.
And me, Rachel Krieger.
It was produced by Russell Balkin and judged by our mothers.
Obviously, we mentioned that we've been sitting on this episode for a while since it went out. We should reassure listeners at this point that Rachel's child has now eaten. Well, that was a lovely episode. Really enjoyed chatting with Helen. It's really nice when you have guests that know how podcasting work and they chat. And Helen was so warm and easy to talk to. So thank you very much to her. Hope you enjoyed it. We do now have to have the big reveal. So Rachel, grandma, Sufta, Bubba, let's hear it.
It's grandma.
Well, that was worth waiting for.
I gave it enough thought because basically I really like the idea that I'm quite young to be a grandparent. So I've chosen really like one of the oldest ways of expressing it. And it's nice to be a grandma, and I love being his grandma. But the only thing is that I don't feel like a grandma. So when the kids are over here, like they came to stay recently for the weekend and they were like, we're at grandma's house. And I was like, I don't know who that is.
See, you are old enough to be a grandma because you're already forgetting who you are. Your grandma is Mark. Grandpa, granddad?
No, why would you make things that easy? He's Papa, because he had a Papa, so that's what he wanted to be. So we're Grandma and Papa. We just went for the names that we wanted that no one else was currently being called.
I think you'll find there are plenty of people out there being called Grandma.
Yeah, okay, but not in our immediate family. So because my daughter's mother is Indian. So she's called Nani, which is grandmother in the language of her origins.
So your daughter-in-law's mother wants to be called Nani. So if you had a competition about who was the best grandmother, you were like, oh, she's Nani, but she's Narnia.
Oh. Oh, dear. Well, it's nice to be back, isn't it? But the reason we were all very specific about what we wanted to be and that it shouldn't be what other people are called within our family is because Mark's father, unfortunately, is no longer with us, but he was called something different by every set of grandchildren because he was known as Grandpa by ours. But then the next sibling that had children, the other side of the family already had kids and their dad was already grandpa, so they had to go for something else. So they called him Papa, but then the next sibling had children. Her husband is Swedish and Papa means dad in Swedish, so they didn't want to be Papa. So he was Zayda to them. And then he was, I think, Grandpops to someone else. And it became just, I mean, we always joke that he would have to have the world's biggest gravestone because it had to say like so many names on it. But so we thought, let's just try and keep it simple.
So we've had the big reveal. You are Grandma Rachel. Mazel tov. We'll have another episode for you next week. And in the meantime, we are also working on our various Edinburgh productions. So if you're going to the Edinburgh Fringe this year, or if you're around and fancy catching one of the previews You can find details on our website. Rachel, tell us about what you're doing at Edinburgh.
My show is called Ultimate Jewish Mother, and it's, basically I'm a double ultimate Jewish mother now because I'm also a grandmother, and it explores what that entails, being the ultimate Jewish mother. It's based around audience interaction. I prove my credentials for being the ultimate Jewish mother. It's very chatty. It's very chilled. It's got songs in it. Come and see it. If you're looking for dates when I might be in a town near you somewhere in the UK, then please check my website, rachelkrieger.com.
I'm doing two things in Edinburgh. I'm doing, first of all, the Jewish compilation show that I've done every year for the past few years called Jewarama. It's a lineup of Jewish and Jewish comedians. And the other thing I'm doing is it's a work in progress of something I'm developing called Shall I Compare Thee in a Funny Way, which is just a very chatty show, audience interaction based, and a bit of material thrown in as well. Don't really have many previews for that because it's so chatty. It doesn't really require previews in the same way other people's shows might. I do have one next week in Tower Bridge, and you can get more information on my website, philipsimon.co.uk. So thanks for listening. It's wonderful to be back with you.
Find us on our social media at Jew Talking Without the G, and also on our own social media at Rach Krieger
and at Phillips Comedy.
And we look forward to you listening to us again in the very near future.
Bye.